85,000 yuan. That's over 10,000 US dollars. Now, we will try it.
The color of the brew is rich and dark with mystery. The first flavor is peppery, but that fades to divine sweetness. The history of my people shimmers in my bones. With every sip, it's as if I'm wordlessly reciting the lineage. I'm at once merged with my ancestors and with those who'll come after me. I grew up believing that rice was to nourish and that tea was to heal. Now I understand that tea is also to connect and to dream. That seduction is deeper and more profound than could happen with any man. Tea Master Sun seems to comprehend that I'm being transformed, yet his words are as colorless as can be.
So, poor. Tell us what you know about it.
The minute he asks this question, I understand two things. First, I want this opportunity so much more now. Second, I may be the lone applicant from a hill tribe and unacceptable to the others on the panel, but the Tea Master is the only person in the room who matters. Not everyone is looking for aged poor these days, I answer. They want raw poor, Mao Cha, because it's considered healthier and richer in cultural meaning. Still, no matter how a person looks at poor, raw, artificially fermented, naturally aged, young tree, old tree, ancient tree, wild tree, cultivated tree, no one is throwing away tea after 6 months any longer. Everyone agrees, the older, the better.
You're telling me two contradictory ideas.
Two contradictory ideas can exist at the same time, maybe more than two. He laughs. The others don't. You asked why I look so young, I say. Would it be too bold of me to ask your theory? He sweeps his arm around the room, echoing the welcome style.
Everyone here knows why. You drink poor. If all women in our country followed your regimen, we would have the most beautiful women in the world.
The two women on the panel give me sour looks, and the tea girls blush. But the master isn't done.
As China gains prosperity, our people want to appreciate the finer things in life. Poor is seen as a way for the newly wealthy to triumph over the poverty of the past. It's also a channel for investment in a country where our citizens are wary of what the government might do. It's considered a drinkable antique. Tea, a beverage that has been ignored for decades, has become collectible once again. But even though it's classified as an antique, it's still alive. And every sip, through the powerful senses of taste and smell, opens our hearts to remember family, love, and hardships that have been overcome. Our ancestors believed that the best teas could eliminate arrogance, dissipate impatience, and lighten our temperaments.
You seem to understand all that, but I believe my colleagues still have much to learn about our beautiful drink. What do you think?
First, he comments on the lack of beauty of the other women not only in the room, but in all China. Then he sharply criticizes the members of his panel. I was raised never to say anything that would be humiliating to others, but when I recite, "If you strike with the right hand, you must soothe with the left," the room goes stunningly quiet. In publicly chastising the Tea Master, I've put myself in his same category, either ruining or securing my prospects.
Haley Davis, Miss Henderson's third grade class, December 10th, 2004. Things I need, huge. Liquid, food, sun, earth, air, moon. Things I need, big. Good education, parents, peace, body, house, whiskers, my cat. Things I need, small. Ski boots, friends, violin strings, dress for Easter, my stuffed bunny, new Harry Potter book.
The world has come. I begin to wait. I want this. I lie awake at night, weighing my chances of getting into the poor program, doubting the answers I gave Tea Master Sun, and questioning why I had to be so rude to him when all he had done was show interest in me. After 5 days, I'm distracted, impatient with guests, and sharp with the maids. I've never taken a vacation from my job, but I need one now. When I first heard about vacations, I was surprised because the closest we Aka had to anything like that was rainy season, the months of darkness when spirits were considered to be mischievously active and we worked on our weaving, sewing, and embroidery. Hence, I've always turned down the opportunity to go on holiday. Even if I'd been forced to take one, where would I have gone? Home? To where people might still blame me for Sampa's terrible death? To tourist sites? Alone? To remind me that I have no one to love me? So I've earned the gratitude of my coworkers because I cover their shifts when they take time off. But now, I need my family. I want them to see how far I've come, but I also need their good wishes. It's a momentous decision, and the outcome may not be what I hope for, but I ask my manager if I might return home for 3 weeks.
It's spur of the moment, he tells me. But how can I say no? You've been an exemplary employee for many years, and you've never asked for a single favor.
I leave on the eve of what Westerners call Christmas, promising to be back in time to cover the absences of others who wish to visit their families during Spring Festival. I buy a ticket for the evening bus to Menghai. The road has been improved, so the trip lasts just 12 hours. In the morning, after an uncomfortable and mostly sleepless night, I board a minibus, which takes me and about a dozen others into the mountains on a new, roughly carved, extraordinarily bumpy and very narrow dirt road. After a few hours, I get off at the stop for Bamboo Forest Village. When I was a girl, the village was nothing, no better or worse than Spring Well. With the new road and the bus stop, Bamboo Forest has opened a small cafe and started a morning farmer's market. About half the women wear their traditional dai, bulang, or aka attire. The rest are dressed like me, in blue jeans, t-shirt, and tennis shoes. I'm taking in the surprising changes when a motorcycle skids past. The rider shouts at me to get out of the way. I'm stunned. I swing my knapsack onto my back and head out of Bamboo Forest. Not long after, I dip onto the trail that will lead to Spring Well. I pass a construction site with bulldozers moving earth and workers building massive retaining walls. The main structure is still a puzzle, shrouded in bamboo scaffolding on which dozens of men crawl like ants. I can't imagine what it is or why it's here. But soon enough, the noise and ugliness are behind me, and I am on a quiet forest path. People are out, tending to their trees. Songs come to me on wafts of air. It's winter, but tea-picking season is around the corner, and each tree seems ready to burst forth with emerald green buds. Every leaf, so alive, reaches for the morning sun and sends forth a fragrance that's light and brilliant. I pick a leaf and chew it. With each breath, another layer of huigan is released. I am home. I know things are now better for my family. When I was first hired at King World, I worked to repay Ama. Then I sent money to help the family. But 2 years ago, Teacher Zhang wrote to tell me that life was going so well at home. Income from tea work had increased 50-fold, an amount difficult for me to absorb, that I no longer needed to worry about my family. Still, I expect everything to be more or less the same, believing that our culture and traditions are so old and deep that they would withstand all attempts to transform them. I'm reassured when I arrive at the spirit gate that protects the entrance to Spring Well. But as I walk farther, dogs snap in the middle of the lane that divides the village and chickens peck at the ground, but everything else is different. Many of the bamboo and thatch houses have been replaced with gray brick boxes. Plastic troughs in pink, orange, and green lie about, filled with soaking laundry, vegetables to be washed for the evening meal, or animal feed. Empty plastic water bottles stand at attention in a neat row on one veranda. And, just like in Bamboo Forest Village, many of the people wear Western-style clothing, although every woman still covers her hair with a scarf of some sort. I don't recognize a soul. No one seems to recognize me either. But what's most shocking is the number of people sitting on the ground with piles of tea leaves spread before them, negotiating with outsiders. I pass one group of visitors bargaining hard. They're Korean. When I reach my home, it's gone, as are all the newlywed huts. Where our house once stood is a building that resembles a greenhouse, glass panes held together with aluminum struts. Nearby are four stucco structures, all of the cheapest and ugliest materials, soulless, antiseptic, not one with glass in the window frames. None of them are built on stilts, so there's no place for livestock to live. One is slightly larger than the others. I don't see separate verandas for the women's and men's sides of the house. The single door stands open.
Hello?
I call at the top of the stairs. I peer into the interior of the house, where people bustle back and forth.
Hello?
I say again, uncertain. Young and old, men and women, all stop what they're doing to glance in my direction. After a long moment, someone says,
"It's girl."
I recognize Abba's voice. The others part, clearing a way for him. He wears plastic sandals and jungle fatigues, as though he's in a war movie, which is about as disconcerting as anything I've seen so far. Otherwise, he's still my Abba, small and wiry. Then Amma comes to his side. She wears her indigo tunic, skirt, and leggings, and her headdress is as magnificent, welcoming, and comforting as I could hope. That night, Amma and the sisters-in-law prepare a meal unimaginable when I was a child. Pork four ways, crispy skin, barbecued ribs, braised belly, and meatballs in clear broth, a soy sauce roasted goose, bitter melon with scrambled egg, rice, and a fruit plate. Instead of eating on the floor around the warmth and glow of an open fire in the main room, we sit on tiny chairs at a small table. This furniture, built little to save cost and for easy storage, nevertheless shows my family's improved circumstances. During dinner, my relatives pepper me with questions about the world beyond Nanuo Mountain. My brothers ask about banks and loans because they now have so many expenses. The sisters-in-law want to know about cosmetics, and I give them my lipstick to share. Their three daughters, who were all born within 1 month of each other, are now 8 years old, attending Teacher Zhang's class and irrepressibly inquisitive.
Do you think I can go to secondary school, Auntie?
How old should I be when I first steal love, Auntie?
When can I visit you in Kunming, Auntie?
After dinner, we gather around the space heater with a single, bare, and very dim light bulb hanging from the ceiling. Electricity! When tea is poured, I gather the courage to question the changes in Spring Well, pointing out that after centuries of steady life, so much has been upended during the 8 years I've been away. And it all started with Mr. Huang?
Our lives changed rapidly after the Hong Konger came to us,
Abba agrees.
But we haven't seen him in years. You know how he is, always looking for something no one else has. He's probably experimenting with leaves in a village on one of the other tea-growing mountains. So be it. With all the traders and collectors visiting us, we don't need him anymore.
But what about our traditions? I ask. Faces stare back at me silently, but their message is clear. Who are you to ask this question with your city ways?
Everyone changes, Abba says at last. We still live in the forest, but the world has come to us. We continue to have the Swing Festival, build a new spirit gate each year, and consult with the Ruma about when to plant our crops, pick leaves, and select propitious marriage dates. But we don't have time for all the cleansing ceremonies, sacrifices, or worrying about dog days and buffalo days when we have so much work to do. Tea growing is very lucrative, you know.
Truly, what is stranger? The matter-of-fact way he's just dismissed our customs, or the way he speaks about business? Business!
We have to guard our product, he continues.
Some especially greedy tea traders have sent hooligans onto our mountain to look for the most ancient trees and chop them down, because it's easier to harvest the leaves that way.
They would chop down a tree? I ask, shocked. What about its soul? But no one seems interested in that.
When the government instituted the quality safety standard, First Brother carries on, we could no longer dry our leaves or artificially ferment them on the ground or on the floor of the house. All tea processing had to be done 50 meters away from animals, so we were forced to sell our livestock. The new rules turned out to be good for us, because now nothing can taint the flavor of our tea. We borrowed 50,000 yuan to build the drying and processing building where our old home once stood.
And we all have our own houses with indoor plumbing, Third Brother chimes in.
Their optimism and free spending ways have been buoyed by an early 30-year extension to the 30 years no change policy. Knowing he would own land until 2034, First Brother ripped out the tea bushes on his terraces, while Second Brother took out his pollarded trees so new tea trees could be planted from seeds. Abba gave up on his vegetable plots.
We can buy what we need in Bamboo Forest Village,
so that he too could plant tea trees. For all three of them, the few wild tea trees on their respective properties have helped pay for these improvements, while Third Brother's once worthless old tea trees are now the most valuable asset in the family.
His trees and your grove,
Abba adds pointedly.
Of course, we can't get your Amma to let us take a look.
Mercifully, First Brother cuts him off.
None of us could have predicted today's situation. Buyers now visit from all over Asia to buy, pour, to drink, sell, and collect. We have to host big banquets, hoping to make them happy. There's a lot of competition. That's why we need to borrow at better rates. And the price of tea keeps going up and up and up.
Everyone pesters me about my chances of getting into the tea college.
If you do well, First Brother claims exuberantly, you can sell our family's tea and make it famous.
I have only one response to that. I have to be accepted first. No one embodies the changes in Spring Well more than Sitte, whom I see the next night at a banquet my family hosts for a buyer from Japan. Her giggling ways seem to be gone, and any embroideries that would mark her as an Aka have been packed away as well. She's gained weight, as has almost everyone in Springwell, and her stomach and breasts push against the buttons of her flowered cotton blouse.
"Visit me tomorrow,"
she urges, and I do. Her house is the nicest in the village, naturally.
The first with electricity, Sitte
boasts. She's also the first person in Springwell to own a cell phone. She insists we exchange numbers,
so we never again lose our connection.
We were once very close, but our lives have taken different paths, which she reminds me of again and again.
You abandoned me. You left without a word. So hurtful you are.
While the things that happened to me remain a secret, the steps in her life are well known by all on Nanuo Mountain. After her parents died, Site consolidated the land awarded to her family in the 30 years no change policy. In addition to her own groves, she also leases stands of tea trees from other families, which has earned her the title of the single largest grower on Nanuo. She further strengthened her status when she paid the Ruma and Nima to allow her brother, Si Do, to return to Spring Well after a spiritual cleansing, of what degree or intensity no one tells me, plus 9 days of feasting provided to every man, woman, and child in the village, all paid for by her. The things money can buy.
He has a new wife and 2 children. Times change, but the stain on him from fathering human rejects will never be completely erased,
Site confides in an offhand manner.
It's best for everyone that he and his family spend most of the year visiting the great sites our country has to offer.
But for all her money, success, and power, she's been unable to control or influence the childmaker spirits. She and La Ba have 3 daughters and have broken with Aka naming practices to show their disappointment. Ma Ko, go find a brother. Ma Lo, go fetch a brother, and Ma Zu, go buy a brother.
Why haven't you remarried?
She asks me another day when we sip tea in the bamboo pavilion she's built to entertain her international buyers.
If a wife dies, a man can remarry in 3 months. When a husband dies, a woman must wait 3 years, but that has come and gone for you.
Does she spout these old-fashioned aphorisms just to goad me? She's obviously let go of many traditions herself, but our loving but contrary relationship is the same as ever. I give a bland answer.
I want to get ahead in life.
The reality is something murkier. I've been alone and lonely for 8 years. I've blinded myself to the advertisements for online dating. I've also learned how to walk through parks and ignore the middle-aged mothers who approach me with photos of their sons and lists of their accomplishments and possessions, a bicycle, a motorcycle, or a car, living with parents, renting an apartment, or owning a condo.
You're too old not to be married,
more than one mother has told me, unasked, by the way.
Then, please consider my son.
But I can't allow myself to repeat the mistakes of the past. If I were ever to fall in love again, it would have to be with someone who'd be accepted by my family. Otherwise, too much heartbreak.
Do you date?
Site persists, using the Western word.
Do you go to the movies and have noodles with men?
Most men don't want to go out with an Aka, I say, hoping to end the subject. She nods knowingly.
You look so young, and you're too quiet. You are too, and not in an admirable way. What about stealing love in the forest while you're here? Surely our men will overlook your faults, and you can have fun, too.
I don't want to steal love. She ignores that and asks, what about a foreigner? You work in a hotel. Maybe you could marry one of them and move to America. I couldn't do that either. It's hard to explain to Site how it feels to be separated from the mountain, my family, and our customs, even though so much has changed. She cocks her head, appraising me. Have you become one of those women who hates men? As I look back at my years in Kunming, I can be grateful that, despite everything, I'm not bitter. I'm not like Deja, wherever she is, either, crippled by Sido's abandonment. But I must protect my heart, even if that means being alone. I'll never hate men, I answer. I'd never confide all that happened to me, but I add, I just don't want to make another mistake. She waves off my words as though they mean nothing.
Look at me. I'm fat, but you're still beautiful. I could find someone to marry you by nightfall.
She could, too, but I'm not interested. Cité's inquisitiveness spreads to others. The sisters-in-law, Abba, my brothers, even some of the nieces and nephews buzz their noses at me like persistent gnats, asking why I haven't remarried, giving me advice, and trying to prove how much they care for my well-being.
We don't want you to be lonely, third brother says.
Second brother takes a more practical approach.
If you don't get married, who will look after you when you get old?
First brother is even more frank.
If you don't get married, who will care for you when you go to the afterlife? You'll need a son to make offerings to you.
He shakes a warning finger at me.
You can only be a leftover woman for a limited time. After that, it will be too late for you. No one will want to marry you.
Abba, who shouldn't speak directly to me on such matters, sends messages through the sisters-in-law, as is proper. Third sister-in-law speaks to me one morning as we gather firewood.
You can't act too picky.
Second sister-in-law passes on the following.
No man wants to marry a woman who is overly ambitious or wants to outshine him.
Abba has first sister-in-law deliver the bluntest caution. People will say you don't like to do the intercourse, but it is your duty to the nation and to the family to have a child. Their talk leaves me feeling both irritated and insecure. During the third week, I walk to Shelter Shadow Village to pay respects to Sanpa's parents, only to find they died 5 years ago in a typhoid epidemic. I also visit Teacher Zhang at the primary school, where the same old maps and posters hang on the bamboo walls as when I was a girl. I confide in him my concerns that I failed my interview and will let my family down again. Here's what he says.
There's nothing you can do about it now. But if you ask me, and I guess you are, I believe you will get in. Who is more qualified than you, after all?
Which lifts my spirit.
I don't get to see or talk to Ama much at all. She's the only person, apart from Teacher Zhang, who seems unchanged. From the way she dresses, to the way she moves, to the way she ignores the spiraling world around her. She's as busy as ever, though, cooking for the family, settling arguments between the sisters-in-law, washing clothes by hand, spinning thread, weaving cloth, embroidering and decorating caps for her grandchildren, delivering babies, and mixing potions for those who come to her ill or injured. She's so busy that I'm alone with her only once, when we visit the mother and sister trees on my last day. As we wander through the grove, she stops here and there to stroke a branch, clip a few leaves, or pick some of the parasites that cling to the mother tree for medicinal concoctions. The last time we were here together,
nothing will take away the pain of a lost child,
Ama says.
My feelings for your daughter are always strongest here, in nature, in the atmosphere. Because that's where Yanye has gone, into the ether. For me, my grief is like a huge hole. Everything flows around that hole. I have forced myself to move forward, but I can never move on.
Ama regards me, weighing so much. When she finally speaks, it's to drive forward the theme that has come at me from every direction since I've returned home.
You shouldn't be alone. You cannot let memories of what happened in the past turn you into someone you wouldn't recognize. Be who you are, girl, and the right person will find you and love you.
While I still don't think love will happen for me again, her words give me strength to say goodbye, walk alone back to Bamboo Forest Village, board the minibus to Menghai, and travel on to Kunming. When I enter my apartment, I find a note from Teacher Guo asking me to visit him immediately. He breaks away from dinner with his family to give me the news. Of the 2,000 people who applied, I am the only student accepted into both programs.
I'm ecstatic.
I sell my moped and most of my belongings, so I'll have money to live on without taking an extra job to support myself. For the next 12 months, I'm rarely apart from Tea Master Sun. In the first track, he teaches me how to buy raw tea, store it, and let nature do its job of aging. I learn to judge the minutes required for wilting, killing the green, kneading, the sun bath, and fermentation. I've had a head start on some of these things, which gives me an advantage over the other students. In the second track, I study the best qualities of tea so that one day I might become a tea master myself, like, and here's my first French word, a wine sommelier.
Taste requires a lifetime of dedication,
Tea Master Sun instills in me.
You have a simple palate shaped by your childhood, cultivated by mountain springs, and enriched by the soil. I like this about you, but you must learn subtlety and refinement. You'll stumble and make mistakes, but as long as you're humble and honest, you will learn.
You love tea. I can see it in your face. Always remember, if you don't love tea, you can't make good tea.
Nothing romantic grows between my tea master and me, but after months of being around him, the last of the sadness and loneliness I felt about the past dissipates like clouds after a storm. When I look back at my life, all 26 years of it, I see the many men who've helped me, but none of them will ever be as important as Tea Master Sun, who opens my eyes, heart, and soul. The things he teaches me range from the practical to the spiritual.
Confucius taught his followers that tea could help people understand their inner dispositions, he tells me. While Buddhists grant tea the highest spiritual qualities, ranking it among the four ways to concentrate the mind, along with walking, feeding fish, and sitting quietly. They believe tea can link the realms of meditation, just the physical process we experience when we drink tea. Our search for Hui Gang causes us to turn inward and reflect as the liquor coats our tongues, shimmers down our throats, and then rises again as fragrance. The Taoists see tea as a way to regulate internal alchemy, be in harmony with the natural world, and serve as an ingredient in the elixir of immortality. Together, these three disciplines have taught us to look upward, to see the state of the heavens, and downward, to observe the natural arrangement of the earth. But whatever you believe, or however you view life, the quality and goodness of a tea are for the mouth to decide.
My mouth does learn to find the best flavors, distinguish the body, light or heavy, discern texture, like water or velvet, as well as detect the most disagreeable notes, chalky, dusty, and rancid, or petroleum, disinfectant, and plastic. I become adept at identifying the differences between Pu'er, Iron Goddess of Mercy, Dragon Well, Silver Needle, and White Peony teas by taste alone. I study auction prices and have seen how values change and surge. In 2001, a special Iron Goddess of Mercy sold for 120,000 yuan, but just 1 year later, a 3-year-old Pu'er sold for 168,000 yuan. 2 years ago, in 2004, when the yuan was at a historic high against the US dollar, a mere 3 grams of a Pu'er once stored in the Palace Museum sold for 12,000 yuan, 32 times the price of gold. And now, just as I'm graduating, another 100 grams of pur has sold for 220,000 yuan, or about $28,000. How can I not rejoice in my good fortune in living with this particular leaf, celebrate my knowledge of it, and show courage in revealing it to others? It's time for me to start plucking the hills and boiling the oceans by entering the tea trade, and I have many options to choose from in Kunming alone. More than 4,000 wholesale and retail tea dealers, as well as countless tea houses, have sprung up in the city like frogs after the monsoon. But before I can apply to any of those establishments, Tea Master Sun presents me with an offer from a business that wants to invest in the future of Pu'er by bankrolling a shop in the Fangcheng Tea Market in Guangzhou, the largest wholesale tea market in China. They'll put up the capital, not much, but enough to rent a space and buy product, and you'll produce the sweat and have all the worry, Tea Master Sun explains. You'll make money on commission until you've paid back the initial investment. Then, you'll own the business 50-50. I don't think you'll find an opportunity better than that. Who can question fate? Bad things happened to me. Then, my fortunes turned when I went to the trade school and Pu'er Tea College. Now, another propitious moment blossoms before me. Perhaps what the Han majority says is true. Good luck comes in threes. I sign the contract with Green Jade Limited on my tea master's advice. Before taking the train to Guangzhou, I write a note to Teacher Zhang. Please ask Cite, my family, and our neighbors to find me the best teas, and I will sell them.
Birthday letter to Constance from Haley, March 1st, 2006. Dear Mom, I am 10 years old, Dad is 60 years old, and today you turn 50 years old. We all have zeros in our ages. I think that's cool. Zero is my favorite number. I like skiing with you. I like riding horses with you. You drive me lots of places. You let me and my friends eat lots of ice cream. Jade and Jasmine like you a lot. You also take us to the movies. You let us talk in the back seat of the car and don't tell us to be quiet like Jade's mom. You help me with the computer. I like science, just like you. You are the best mom in the world. No other mom could have taken her daughter to the observatory to look through the telescope like you took me when no one else was there. I love you as much as the whole universe. Happy birthday, Mom. Haley.
The sweetest dew of heaven. I've been in Guangzhou 2 weeks, and every morning I wake up with a knot in my stomach. Even 7 floors up, I can hear the inelegant thrum of the city, and knowing I have to venture into it, be a part of it, is a challenge. I get dressed, eat breakfast standing up, and leave my apartment. The hallway reeks of garlic and cigarette smoke. I squeeze into the too small elevator with other people who live in the building. When we reach the ground floor, I'm pushed from behind as my neighbors hurry to be first through the lobby and out the door. Once they're gone, I linger for a moment. I take a breath to fortify myself. You can do this. I step outside, and I'm immediately swept into a current of thousands of people heading to work and school. Not even in my dreams could I have imagined such a big city. It's loud and crowded, with more than double the population of Kunming. Instead of eddies of bicycles like I used to see in Teacher Zhang's posters, the road is solidly packed with cars, at a standstill, their horns blaring. I pass restaurant windows filled with big aquariums in which sea creatures I don't recognize wait to be scooped out by the chef for a family's lunch or dinner. Why would anyone eat those things? Stores sell all manner of goods, more than anyone could ever want or need. To get rich is glorious. But the success of the campaign has also brought a dark side. Beggars. China isn't supposed to have them, and the government is supposed to keep peasants in the countryside. But with so many people, and not enough watchers? It's a short walk to my subway stop near the Martyrs' Memorial Gardens. Once I reach the platform for Line 1, I let the tide of humanity draw me with it into the car that will take me 7 stops to the exit for the Fengchun Tea Market in the Li Wan District. We are so jammed together that the other passengers and I sway as one entity through every acceleration, bump, and turn. Things are quieter once I'm back on the street, but not by much, because hundreds, maybe thousands of people work in the market. It's still hard for me to grasp its vastness. It covers several blocks and does big business. This year, it's on target to sell 67 billion yuan worth of tea, with Pu'er making up a third. Each block contains a cluster of 4-story buildings. On each floor, in each of those buildings, on each of those blocks, are dozens upon dozens of shops. Some are just 4 by 4 meters. Others take up half a floor. Still others are little more than a couple of stools surrounded by bags of tea overseen by a single family in the open hallway, and banded together with similar, smaller dealers. The long hallways are dimly lit by fluorescent tubes. Shipping containers, crates, cardboard boxes, and stuffed burlap bags create obstacles outside nearly every purveyor's door. But not every shop sells tea. Some offer cups, pots, glass pitchers, picks to break apart tea cakes, tables and trays for tea pouring, in every price range imaginable. When I unlock the door to my Midnight Blossom tea shop, I'm greeted by the intoxicating aroma of Pu'er, the only type of tea I sell. Knowing the rest of my workday will follow my rhythms allows me to relax. My first customer is from Beijing. We exchange business cards, each of us making internal calculations, as happens in every transaction across China these days. His belt buckle has been let out a couple of notches, which tells me that whatever his business is, he must be doing well, but not so well that he feels comfortable buying a new belt. Is he a collector or an amateur trying to get in on the action? I learn he's serious when he says he's looking to buy a GN, which holds 12 stacks of 7 Bing to a total of 84 cakes of Pu'er to give as gifts to people in the government to help him build Guangxi connections. It quickly becomes evident, however, that he doesn't know a thing about tea. I could take advantage of him, sell him an inferior tea or overcharge him, but in just 2 weeks, I've already started to gain a reputation for being fair and honest, something that can't be said for some of my competitors. Besides, if he's an entrepreneur on his way up, this could be the first of many purchases. I brew tea, we taste it. I make a different infusion, we taste that, and so on for a couple of hours. I teach him a popular saying that has recently sprung up. You'll regret tomorrow what you don't store today. The idea encourages him to exceed my expectations. He buys a kilo of loose tea for his personal use. An hour later, we get down to real business. He orders 20 kilos of Springwell Village Pu'er to put on the menus at his 8 cafes. As I copy down his shipping information, he asks where I'm from. I was born in Yunnan, I reply. His nose prickles enviously. Then he asks the question I hear nearly every day.
Why would you move to Guangzhou? Every person who lives here longs for the tranquility of your province, remote and untouched, with clean air and wild forests.
I miss it, I admit, but I'm helping my family by selling the natural gifts of our mountain. Actually, I'm selling treasures from the 6 Great Tea Mountains plus another 20 Tea Mountains, including Nanuo. Si Tae has found some wonderful teas from Lao Banjiang. What she sends isn't the highest quality, but the liquor is good, and the name value unsurpassed. I think of my Lao Banjiang Pu'er as a small but surprising vintage from an area that produces some breathtaking products. After my customer departs, the afternoon stretches out before me. I fetch bottles of spring water, wash and dry serving utensils, and package tea in single servings to sell or give as samples. I look up at 5 o'clock. I jump back on line one, and it's as awful as it was this morning. My attitude about it is better, though, because at the end of the ride, I will reward myself. I get off at the stop for Martyrs Memorial Gardens. I buy a bottle of water from a woman who sells commemorative keychains, pinwheels, and other items from a cart. I wave and say hello in my pathetic Cantonese to 3 retired men, wearing their old People's Liberation Army uniforms, who bring their caged finches to the park, smoke cigarettes, and share stories. I stroll along the walkways to one of the benches that ring the memorial. I sit, breathe, and listen. There's no escaping the rabid roar of the city, but the rustling of the breeze through the trees sweeps away the stresses of the day. I found this spot a week ago, and already I've learned the patterns of others like myself, who seek comfort in the park's embrace. On the bench to my left sits a woman around 60. She wears the costume of her age, a short-sleeved white blouse and gray trousers. Past hardship has set lines in her face. I'm most struck by her eyes, which are surprisingly wide for a Chinese. Her purse serves as a paperweight to keep what I assume are copies of her son's biography and photos of him from blowing away. She has none of the desperation or pushiness of the mothers in Kunming's parks who used to hound me, looking for daughters-in-law for their sons. Rather, during the past week, she's placidly watched young women meander by, never once approaching or speaking to one of them. A month later, I arrive at the park, ready to let the hustle of the long day fall from my shoulders, when the woman on the bench next to mine motions for me to join her. "I'm Mrs. Chang," she announces in English. "I've noticed you don't know much Cantonese, and my Mandarin is abysmal. English will work for me if it will work for you." She pats the seat next to her. "Please, sit down." I obey because I don't know how to avoid her invitation politely, but I take care not to glance at the pile of papers between us. If she's been watching me as I've been watching her, she has to know I am not interested in matchmaking. "I'm a widow," she tells me straight off. Her revelation causes me to be equally blunt. "So am I." "Such a shame when you're so young," she blinks a few times. "I was young when I lost my husband, too." All these weeks from my spot on my bench, she seemed nice enough. But if she thinks I'm going to talk about Sun Pa... "Years ago," she continues, "I was a high school English teacher, and my husband taught philosophy at South China Normal University. Have you heard of it?"
"No, but I grew up far from here."
"I can tell."
"Too. My cheeks burn."
"I've spent time in the countryside myself," she goes on, ignoring my discomfort. "During the Cultural Revolution, my husband and I were labeled black intellectuals and sent to the countryside to learn from the peasants. I was 6 months pregnant." "Have you ever been pregnant? Do you have a child to care for?"
"Yes. And no."
She searches my eyes to make sure I'm telling the truth. "No secrets between us. I like that." After a pause, she says, "My husband and I, two bourgeois revisionists, learned to grow sweet potatoes and millet." She's talking,
And I'm thinking, so much confiding and we don't even know each other.
5 years after our son was born, my husband caught a cold which turned into pneumonia.
Her throat hitches.
Then, after his death, I forced myself to survive.
Much like I had to do.
I needed to raise and protect my son. I petitioned the authorities to let us come home to Guangzhou, claiming unreasonable hardship. But I wasn't invited back until after President Nixon's visit to China. I was told the country would once again be joining the international community. China would need English teachers. My son and I have been here ever since.
I'm glad you were able to return. My teacher, where I grew up, never went home. He couldn't get permission.
That happened to a lot of people. My son and I were lucky.
The next night and the night after that, I sit with Mrs. Chang. We share stories of the countryside. She doesn't miss a single thing about it. She's never been to Yunnan, and although she's heard of its beauty, she has no interest in visiting.
When I think of the countryside, she says, I remember only suffering.
2 months later, my day-to-day routine has barely changed. The noise and crowds are still difficult for me, but I'm adapting. I ride the subway to the tea market, work, ride the subway to the park, and walk straight to Mrs. Chang's bench. We meet every evening except Sundays, talk for a half hour or so, and watch the passing girls to evaluate who might make a good daughter-in-law for her.
Oh, the laughter! This one's too skinny, that one's too fat. This one wears too much rouge, that one's too pale. This one looks spoiled. That one looks like a factory girl sniffing for a man to buy her gold and jade.
Not everything is about matchmaking, though. The more she's confided in me, the freer I've felt to unburden myself of my past, which until now, I've never been able to do. Mrs. Chang knows everything about me. Everything. Never has she criticized me or made me feel ashamed, but once she said,
You did the best possible given your circumstances. Sometimes all we can do is count ourselves lucky to be alive.
Tonight, as usual, we're making our assessments of the girls who pass by. Too studious, too vapid, too clumsy, too sure of herself. When Mrs. Chang suddenly blurts,
Are you ready to meet my son?
I stiffen. Insulted that she thinks so little of our friendship. I haven't been talking to you so I might find a husband.
Of course you haven't, she responds calmly. But the two of you might make a felicitous pair.
I don't want to get married again.
Because of what happened to you?
It's not that. The way I live now, I have the freedom to do as I please.
To me, that's just another way of saying you've seen hardship. I, too, have survived hardship, as has my son. Don't you think we've all earned a little contentment?
I like Mrs. Chang, but she's wrong if she thinks I want to meet her son, let alone marry him.
Still, in her own clever way, she's been working on me since the first moment she saw me enter the park.
She picks up the pile of papers that sat untouched between us all these weeks and scoots closer to me.
Let me show you some photographs, she says. Here's Jin when he graduated from primary school. We hadn't been in Guangzhou very long. See how thin he was?
I've enjoyed Mrs. Chang's companionship and I don't want it to end, so I look at every photo with absolute courtesy but zero interest. In June of the Western calendar, 2 weeks after being presented with Mrs. Chang's scheme and 3.5 months after arriving in Guangzhou, the heat and humidity of this subtropical city has permeated the Midnight Blossom tea shop, as it has every shop in the Fengchun tea market. The unbearable climate doesn't keep people away, though. By 10 o'clock, every chair and stool around my table is occupied by an international assortment of buyers from Korea, Taiwan, and Japan. The late afternoon sees the departure of these buyers and the arrival of my regulars. Mr. Lin, in his 60s, lean and successful in our new economy, was the first to bring his laptop to my shop so he could monitor his stocks while speculating on tea futures. The next day, Mr. Chow brought his laptop. He looks like he's in his 60s too, but not a single strand of gray threads his unruly black mop. He's an entrepreneur. What else? And he owns a string of 5 shoe stores around the city. He's remained a humble man and is easily awed. Mr. Kwan is the youngest by a few years and the only one who's had to take mandatory retirement. As a former schoolteacher, he can't afford a laptop, but the other men share what they find, and all activity is focused on poor. The 3 men all have their own special cups. Mr. Lin, the wealthiest of the 3, opens a bamboo box and lifts from the silken cushions a cup made of Blanc de Chine, perfect for appreciating the clarity of liquor in the bowl. Mr. Chow and his newer money also bought a cup in white porcelain, only his has calligraphy in blue on the exterior. It's a sad couplet, fit for the widower he is. It was hard to meet you, and harder to bid farewell. The east wind blew weak, and all the flowers fell. Mr. Kwan's teacup is a cheap copy of a Ming Dynasty chicken cup, showing a hen tending her chicks. My tea men gossip as though they've known each other from childhood. They discuss the final bids at tea auctions, international tea prices, the effect of the weather on terrace and wild tea in Yunnan, Fujian, and other tea-growing regions around the world. Today, they debate the health benefits of poor. Mr. Lin, the most highly respected and educated of my tea men, delves deep into the past to press his beliefs.
Lu Yu, the great tea master, wrote that tea can alleviate the stoppage of the bowels, relieve melancholy, and remove aching of the brain, stinging of the eyes, and swelling of the joints. He said that tea is like the sweetest dew of heaven, so naturally it can only do us good. Tea helps us to think quicker, sleep less, move lighter, and see clearer, Mr. Chow agrees.
Mr. Kwan, who always tries to best his betters, adds,
Our traditional Chinese medicine doctors tell us that tea, poor in particular, has more than 100 proven purposes to boost the immune system, balance the body's hot and cold temperatures, lower blood pressure and blood sugar, and help melt away hangovers as well as tumors.
It didn't help my wife, Mr. Chow reminds them.
How do you know? Mr. Kwan asks, not unkindly. Perhaps the tea prolonged her life.
Myself? Mr. Lin cuts him off. I no longer go to the herbalist or acupuncturist. I believe in Western medicine.
You can afford it, Mr. Kwan remarks defensively. But let me point out that American scientists are now studying catechins and polyphenols. You must have read about them. They're the compounds in tea that provides the antioxidative, anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial, anti-cancer.
Mr. Chow sinks into his stool. It's clear that memories of his wife are still distressing.
Anti-this, anti-that, anti-everything, I jump in, trying to lighten the mood.
Yesterday, I saw a medicinal pour in the drugstore guaranteeing weight loss.
Of course, Mr. Kwan enthuses. Because it cuts through grease. The world knows that. My cholesterol is much lower, my lipids too.
But what do these claims matter in the end? I ask. Shouldn't we just enjoy it? Where I come from, we always drank raw tea. You tell me you prefer the stomach-warming and mouth-smoothness attributes of a pour that's been naturally aged for 5 years or more. Let us discuss the merits of each. I pour one of the pours Si Tei sent from Lao Banzhang. In the time I've been here, the wholesale price for this tea has jumped